So, here we are, week 4 of session 11. We are focusing on the theme of knowledge. And as we've done in the past, we're in this reading, we come at knowledge from the point of view of time. We're starting in the middle of the time section of the first TSK book. So we want to explore why that's a valuable approach, and I think one of the things that we're going to see is that we're getting, you know, more and more we're looking at knowledge as growing out of a particular understanding or orientation toward time and space. Toward the end of the reading for this week, Rinpoche talks about knowledge as the child of time and space, and that's a nice image. If we engage time differently, then the knowledge that's available to us is also different. And that's basically what we're exploring. So in the reading, the way we start off with that is that the text says that time is a bridge to other realms. And although it's not put quite that way, you can think about that as a knowledge point. If we enter a different realm, it means discovering an unknown, right? An unknown realm. And a world beyond the known. And so that takes us right back into knowledge. So on page 149, the beginning of the last paragraph, Rinpoche says that what we need to do, he says it's essential for us to surrender the ordinary blinding knowing to wider perspectives. And that takes us very much back to what we were looking at, have been looking at in the last few sessions. Our ordinary knowing is a limiting knowing. We would like to free ourselves from ordinary knowledge. It doesn't mean that ordinary knowledge is wrong, and it doesn't mean that we have to stop operating on the level of ordinary knowledge, but it does mean that when ordinary knowledge makes the claim that this is the way things are, we need to surrender that claim. Because as long as we hold on to that claim, we are blinded to a greater knowledge. So although Rinpoche didn't use this image of blinding very much, I don't think, in the TSK books, it's actually a nice image. Because you know, the whole point in TSK, in a sense, is to change our way of being and see what we haven't seen before. As long as we don't do that, you know, there's this sense of dis-ease, this sense of limitation, of missed opportunity. That kind of colors our lives, and TSK gives us the opportunity to do something with that. So, okay, we have to give up our ordinary knowing and open up to wider perspectives. And so one of the things that the reading says early on is that when we look at our ordinary world, all of the pieces of which interlock, I'm looking at this last paragraph on page 148, when we look at our ordinary world and then we bring more time into it, or a different kind of timing, then we discover all these gaps and discontinuities. So he puts this in terms of space, you could say. And the an image that may help here is if you think of a fabric that is loosely woven and that has a pattern imprinted on it. If you look between the weave, look at the space between the weaves, the fabric is gone. There is no, I mean, that's true too, but the pattern is gone. You know? So that's what, you know, let's say the pattern shows a city. if you look between the weaves of the fabric, the threads of the fabric, that image is gone. That ordinary way of knowing is not there. And that's, I think, what he's referring to in terms of gaps and discontinuities. So it's a not knowing in terms of the ordinary structures of knowing. I don't know if that image works in the sense that, you know, the knowing that's available is not just gaps and discontinuities. And in fact, Rinpoche says that gaps and discontinuities, that's not the point. He says that on the second paragraph on page 149. It's just a transitional view. We have our standard structures, and they begin to kind of break apart. And that's an indication that a different timing and therefore a different knowing is available. So you give up your commitment to the ordinary way of knowing. At the bottom of page 148, he says, if we surrender our ordinary construals or knowings and utilizations, I have to think about utilizations, but anyway, if we surrender our ordinary knowing, we're allowing everything to be shown as space. Mm-hmm. And then he talks about the fact that the discontinuity that results from that can lead to very remarkable experiences. We have never focused on that, and we're not going to focus on that right now. But he does refer at the top of page 149 even to miraculous events. So if anybody wants to share some miraculous events, that's fine, here or on the web. But that's not what we're going to be looking at so much. Okay, so what Rinpoche says here is, right where he talks about surrendering the ordinary blinding knowing, he says that's really equivalent to feeding everything that is given with time back into time. So sometimes, I think in other places in the book, he talks about feeding time into time. Well, actually in the next sentence, I'm sorry. He says you can feed time into time, and that gives you more energy, and then you can feed that back. But it's important, I think, to see that when he introduces this idea, he's saying you start with everything that's given by time or with time, and you feed that in. In other words, whatever shows up, whatever manifestations, whatever the appearances are that, you know, as you look around the room or as you look at your inner experience, whatever it is, all of that is given by time, and so you just feed it back into time. You don't let it solidify. You don't let it crystallize out. You don't let it turn into something that is already in place. And in that way, you keep the aliveness of time, and you don't settle for this blinding lower-level knowledge. Now, it's a little bit... what do I want to say here? You know, we can follow this out theoretically, but it's really important to be able to look at it experientially. And so we will do a practice in a few minutes. We have to set things up a little. We won't exactly do it in terms of feeding time into time, partly because... I think that would require some real exploration that we don't have time for. And also because, you know, our focus is more knowledge. But when we do the practice, it does really kind of amount to feeding time into time. And it's interesting, I was struck by the phrase, and I looked it up on the CD, you know, looked it up on the PDFs. And there are other places where Rinpoche talks about feeding knowledge into knowledge. You do that through inquiry. He talks about feeding questions into questions. So it's like, you know, never settling what you arrive at. You always you always take what you have and feed it back into the process. You never stop. You never say, this is it. So Michael says, perhaps in the chat box here, he says, perhaps the gaps in the picture composed by ordinary knowing indicate that ordinary knowing is unable to comprehend the underlying wholeness. And for another way of knowing, more at home in wholeness, there would be no gaps? Well, I think that's right. The picture of gaps, as he says, this is really kind of a transitional view that lets us, as he says here, free ourselves from our ordinary way of knowing. And I think if we had a view of the whole, you could say, it wouldn't make sense to talk about gaps because everything would kind of fit together seamlessly, you might say. I'm thinking a little about what you say here, that ordinary knowing is unable to comprehend the underlying wholeness. That seems right to me. Ordinary knowing is always focused on this or that, right? It's always focused on this time and that place and this object and this event. There is an underlying whole in ordinary knowing, which we could think of in terms of the field communique, to use that phrase. But ordinary knowing is not really available, or not really, doesn't really have access to it. So yeah. Okay. So the theme that's being worked with here is that time, the energy of time, is what keeps knowledge from getting frozen in place. It frees us from the known. It cuts through consolidating tendencies, is one of the ways that gets talked about here. So we are, we don't hold on to things. Right. So at the bottom of page 149, he says, all understandings and realizations which we have can be fed back in this manner, rather than holding on to them and taking them as the truth. Right? There's no, it's an ongoing dynamic in TSK. Time never stops. And of course, time never stops anyway, but we see that in a very linear way. And so we say, okay, time goes on from moment to moment, but in each moment there's a kind of a frozen quality. That we are really working against. We want to be able to challenge the stuckness of linear time. That's a quote from week 2 of this session from Dynamics. The timing that we're looking at here, this kind of dynamic, it doesn't time things out in the usual sense. So when Lumpshe talks about timing things out, I think he means that things get distributed in a particular way. They're timed out, and then that's our reality. And if we feed time back into time, or if we're just tuned in to the dynamic of time, then things don't get timed out in that way. And so what happens is that every moment of appearing, I don't know if I actually have the reference to this here, but he talks about it as being a singularity, a word that is kind of popular these days. Oh, here it is. It's on page 150. Okay. So on page 150, he's talking about how timing, or time, lifts knowing, lifts it into a totally new type of space experience. It doesn't lift the self, he says here, because the self is so committed to the old way of knowing. It's part of the old way of knowing. But there's a shift into a different space, is what he says here, a new type of space experience. And it's transformative. He talks about it as being alchemy. Right? And then he says, just prior to the culmination of this lifting, so he's actually very precise about where it happens, but I don't know that we can go into that. But he says, just prior to that, and this is the second paragraph on 150, just prior to the culmination of the lifting, there's the experience of something that might loosely correspond to what physics calls a singularity, a breakdown of ordinary space-time laws. Happenings cease to follow a standard coherence or ordinary or ordering principle. There's also, he says, you know, not even the distinction between possible and impossible works in the same way. So we actually are going to want to practice with that. But, you know, we want to keep it in a kind of, we look at it in kind of a down-to-earth way. So you know, a few weeks ago we were looking at the quality of the stuckness of linear time, and we were looking at how that could be a gateway, you know, the place where things don't work, where we feel totally stuck. That's exactly the place where there could be an opening. Here we want to do something a little different. We want to look at a knowing in which the usual pattern doesn't apply. The usual law-like regularities don't apply. The usual space-time laws, as he says, don't apply. And that's what he means by a singularity. And I think it's kind of easy. I mean, there's an easy way to think about singularity in terms of time. I'm not saying this is the whole thing, but there's a way of thinking about it where the singularity is that each moment is new. You remember last week in Visions of Knowledge, or we were looking, you know, there was the text said it was important to observe in every instant. And I think that actually goes along with the idea of a singularity. If every moment is its own moment, it's not caught up in some linear time structure. And if you observe in that way, so that you don't have the usual law-like regularities, then you're on the edge of a new knowing and a new kind of freedom. So he says here that's available in all ordinary appearance. And the suggestion that I want to make is, and then we'll do the practice, do this practice, is that we want to do this in kind of, you know, without feeling like we have to go away from ordinary experience. So if you look outside, if you look at page 152, there are these diagrams, and then there are two paragraphs in italic that are talking about the diagrams. And in the last sentence, actually, he says, eventually these beckoning possibilities, so you have this singularity within each moment, you could say, within each here, there are these possibilities of going in different directions. And he says, eventually these beckoning possibilities can be integrated back into the appearance of the ordinary stayed series. Stayed here means, very ordinary, very conventional. Can be integrated back into the appearance of the ordinary stayed series again. With this series then being seen in a very ordinary, but also a very new light. So that's really what we would like to do. And there's a little guidance at the bottom of page 152 in how to do that. He says, the overall procedure consists in initially adopting a somewhat more spacious view, a kind of disinterested attention that encompasses both self and object and is unimpressed by ordinary temporal connections. Unimpressed is nice. It's like you just don't take them all that seriously, all the claims that are made. So when we look around, you know, when we just look around the room, or when we let the mind follow its sequence, we're just immediately in the realm of conventional time, of linear time, right? Even if we're just looking at a plant on the shelf in front of us, you'd say, well, you know, we're not so much thinking about a temporal sequence, but it's implicit, it's implied. You know, there's the, how did the plant get to be there, the growing of the plant, the all of that. All of that is built in, and there's nothing wrong with seeing things in that way. I mean, it's completely accurate at a certain level. But what we would like to do now is just let each moment arise as its own moment, without being too impressed by ordinary temporal connections. And as I said, that's one way of thinking what it means to experience each appearance as a singularity. You know? The usual connections are not impressive. We're still working at the ordinary level. We don't discount those, but each moment is its own arising. And that's a theme, of course, in TSK. And the point here is, this is an exercise with time, but as we look in that way, then the usual knowing doesn't operate, not in the usual way, not with the same degree of solidity. So, let's try that, okay? We'll take 5 minutes. We have a little more time than usual. Maybe we'll even take six. So we want to look in this sense that everything, whatever arises, is a kind of singularity, without being too impressed by the usual temporal connections. Let's try that. Okay, let's come back together. So I invite you to share some of your experience. I will share a very modest experience while we're waiting here. In the video, sometimes for reasons I don't understand, one person's video or another's shows up. And so while we were doing this exercise, I was watching David, and at a certain point I noticed that over his shoulder, and outside the window, there was a tree, and the tree was blowing in the breeze. And I just was struck by how, you know, here I am, maybe 3,000 miles away, and the timing of the wind that's blowing the leaves in the breeze is, you know, it has nothing to do with me, and yet it was real. It was, you know, I think I had it. I mean, it was a real perception. And it just struck me that you know, our perceptions tend to be like that. I understood what was going on, but it really wasn't very much what I was doing. Okay, let's see. Eliana says, when I conduct time inward, I feel that I'm bringing another dimension to the experience. So conducting time inward is a nice way of thinking about this, and we've used language like that in the past. It isn't exactly the language that's used right here, but I think it's a nice way to engage it. Okay. So when I conduct time inward, I feel that I'm bringing another dimension to the experience. The awareness opens and knowledge makes itself available. Self and object are included. Self and object are included. So that's our ordinary way of seeing, right? And the gap disappears because I now can see that there is no outside. Okay, good. Yeah, our usual sense of inside and outside, of subject and object and so on, that's one thing. But I think, Eliana, when you refer to conducting time inward, then in that inward, there, the usual distinctions don't operate. So I think it is good to focus, or to let this exercise lead us in toward knowledge, which is what you're doing here. Good. John says, one thing I noticed is that my thoughts were more open and creative because they didn't need to be tracking my usual concerns or the story of the external world. It also makes it easier to feed time into time, more connected to the invariable depth of time. Yeah, I think, you know, what changes in doing this practice? Well, I think in a very real sense, what changes is just the focus from moment to moment, you know, the being, the observing in every instant. That was the language we used, but the singularity dimension of experience, and when that happens, right, then the story of the external world, and for that matter the story of the internal world, you know, they're not, our energy, as you say, John, doesn't go into making sure we're aligned with what we understand to be happening, because we don't care about that. We're kind of disinterested in that. So if you come into this practice and you have a certain attitude or emotional state or set of concerns, it's not that those go away, but as you look at them from moment to moment, they begin to lose some of their, you might say, their solidity. I'm thinking here of the consolidating tendency that that gets described in the text. Okay, well, that seems to be all that people have to say. So let's look at that from a different perspective now. I'm still following along in the reading. And that is that when we look in this way, the quality that begins to come up is one of appreciation and intimacy. So there's that little break on page 153, and then he talks about this as a shift from a thing perspective. Oh, sorry, Michael had a comment. He said, so let's go back. Put aside what I just said. Treating experience like a singularity in time. Mm-hmm. Appearance felt like a place, a vacation spot. The tree branches were free to sway, birds came and went, myself breathing. The sense of a sequence of separate events gave way to a sense that I was being invited into a place free of separation or upheaval. Yeah, that's nice. So here we have some tree branches swaying again. There's a certain... I like the emphasis on freedom. And maybe it can lead us into where I'd started to go, which was where Rinpoche now goes. He's talking about shifting from a thing perspective. What happens is there's an appreciation of space. Notice how closely space and time are being talked about here. We're feeding time into time, or we're aware of the singularity dimension of timing, that each event has its own dynamic relationship to time that doesn't depend on a linear structure. But that singularity leads us then into an appreciation of space, and I think that's what you were saying too, Michael, is you can appreciate what's going on. You don't need to commit to things being a certain way, and so you can appreciate the way that things are. So Rinpoche says here, there's an appreciation of space and there's an increasing emphasis on intimacy. And he says those two things lead us into the second stage. I think he means, or I think that's the same as the second level of time. So appreciation and intimacy. And he does this very nice, very, very useful distinction here. I think it's useful for people, if you're thinking about teaching TSK or leading a study group or anything like that. It's always, especially if you're working with the first book, it's always a question about the relationship between the first level, the second level, and the third level. And in these pages here, Rinpoche goes into that very explicitly. That's helpful. It's good to know that that resource is there. So he's going to talk about how appreciation and intimacy are connected to the second level of time. And he makes this interesting distinction. He says on the first level, things are transitory. Right? Things are always changing, which means they're always interacting, among other things. It means they're always interacting with other things. And then he goes on to say, that's true on the first level. Things are transitory, but it's not completely accurate on the first level, because not everything interacts with everything. As he says a little later, we don't interact with the center of Jupiter. It's very difficult to speak on first level terms about there being any kind of interaction or interactability, as he says. But he says on the second level, you can talk about it that way. And the reason for that is what he talks about as a subtle characterizing. This is on page 154, about two-thirds of the way down, where he basically says that our reference to things is very related to the things themselves. This is a kind of a complicated discussion. I don't think I'll try to go into it now. But if you go back, if you read it carefully, I think it will be. I think it's pretty clear. One way of thinking about that, or that seems to me helpful, is if you look at it in terms of the field communique. Right? In the field, everything is being communicated simultaneously, and that includes everything that we discover in the field, all the objects, our own mental states, our own ways of characterizing them, and in that sense, everything in the field interacts with everything else in the field. I think that's part of what he's saying here. And he's saying that really is a second level kind of appearance, right? And even in that way of saying it, if we go on to page 155, he makes this distinction in the second full paragraph. He says, in saying that any point can be interacted with, and in a way that shows space, the can of this axiom seems very limited on the first stage. But in stage two, the can becomes much stronger. It is possible to see directly a timed-out interaction. So this timing helps us to understand the interactability. This shows quite vividly the presence of a pervasive space, the familiar, relatively opaque and rigid surface appearance is itself an interacting and a space. Okay, I think that's all I'm going to try to say about that right now. What I do want to talk about, and I think this is really, what can I say? It's very important for understanding the value of TSK. We've talked about this on a number of occasions. The concern with TSK is that it can turn into a kind of theoretical inquiry, and it's kind of exciting on the level of ideas. But that's not at all what Rinpoche is concerned with. What he wants to address is that our lives are closed down and we want to open them up. Right? There's a nice statement of that on page 156, the first full paragraph. He says, this has important consequences for our own lives. As long as we consider our experience to be made up of things, our lives and capacity for appreciation and fulfillment are constantly being restricted or locked up. He says, even if you understand about physics, you still have the same frozen world of appearance, the same fears, the same fixations. The vivid and radiant quality of our experience cannot shine through. So what is TSK about? What is TSK for, you could say? Well, it's to allow for these qualities of appreciation and for fulfillment and to let our lives be vivid and radiant. And the timing dimension, what we practiced with a little bit just now, is meant to, awaken that. And that's where we'd like to go, is appreciation, fulfillment, radiance, a vivid aliveness, a nourishment. And so the other side of that is also important to consider. If we feel kind of stuck and dull, or if we feel negative kind of hopeless maybe, or if we feel emotional and angry, those are all indications that time and space and knowledge are operating in a restricted way. And the, you know, what is TSK about? Well, it's to be able to cut through that. And even in the, even if there are occasions and situations where you can't exactly cut through it, where it seems very real, there's still around the edges, you know, there's a certain sense that you might be able to develop, and we've looked at that, where you say, okay, this is what I know to be true, this is what I understand to be true in this moment, but there is a not knowing, you know, there is the source of that, and if we could connect into that not knowing, then we would be much more ready to touch that vivid, alive, intimate, dynamic quality. That's what TSK is about. So if you're feeling that way, great. If you're not, just be aware that that's the direction we'd like to go to. Okay, now I want to talk just a couple of minutes, and then we'll stop, about what he says at the... at least it's a theme at this point in the chapter. He starts talking about how, about religious traditions and about meditation. And what he says is actually very striking. He says, religion and meditation are pointing at something very similar to this second level experience of time, but they do so in a limited way. So he says, let's look at the bottom of page 157. He says, these various traditional approaches are effective because they're indirectly working with the structure of time as approximately mapped out by traditions still laboring under first-level views. And then he talks about how that's limited. You know, they just don't quite understand what's going on. Now this is, you know, you might say this is really pretty, almost, I'm hesitating to say the word, but it'll be easier if I put it in someone else's mouth. Imagine someone reading this and saying, well, this is arrogant. You know, you're telling me that I have sort of a half complete or an incomplete understanding of something that you're showing me the truth of. But, you know, what you're dismissing here is all these wonderful religious traditions that have nourished and sustained people for thousands of years, and you're saying, oh, no, but, you know, TSK is better than all those. Well, no, I don't think that's the case. But I do think that Rinpoche is saying that not that TSK is a better view. You know, remember that we're never trying to go beyond what already appears. We're never trying to go beyond the ordinary, let alone go beyond, you know, the wonderful qualities that can appear in meditation or in religious, you know, in faith and devotion, or yoga is another example he gives, or you know, he doesn't talk about this, but maybe the quality of wonder that shows up in scientific inquiry. All of those are, you know, how can I say it, perfect as they are. But the TSK vision is just asking us to look at them in a different light, you know, to look at them in terms of time and space and knowledge. And if that works for us, if that appeals to us, if we see, you know, I don't mean to make it sound that subjective, if we see the value of that, and we do it experientially, not just theoretically, then we have access to something really truly powerful. Okay. there's an interesting little exchange here and in the chat box that I think is related to this, and we'll just look at this and then stop. So Michael says, when we can see our experience as oscillation, as going back to the sense of time, like the seasons, swaying branches, gently bobbing waves, life seems welcoming. But when we see a sustained evolution in one direction, such as global warming, personal illness, personal worries, life feels threatening. I wonder if a wider perspective can see everything as a natural back and forth, a comforting oscillation. And John says, the oscillation of life and death. And Ileana says, for me, TSK points out how we can welcome all the oscillations. Okay, I think that's a good place to stop. Let me try to tie it into what we were just talking about. There's, you know, certainly religious traditions will talk about the flow of life and death, at least some will. And will ask us, I think, to be open to the aliveness of the world. I think in TSK, as Eliana says, TSK is extremely welcoming of all of that. TSK, you know, here we're looking at the timing dimension, so we end up talking about oscillations. But we can look at the space dimension, and then we end up talking about accommodation, or the knowledge dimension, and then we talk about going beyond the known, freeing ourselves from the structures of the known. That's a way of understanding. It's a vision. It's a vision of reality that opens up the whole range of possibilities. Okay, well, let's stop there. Next week, we'll be reading In Love of Knowledge and Visions of Knowledge, and the focus, we will not be as focused on time, so it'll have a very different flavor to it. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.